Hi, welcome back to the channel. This video is another update on the situation in Russia. This series of videos is looking at the financial implications of the invasion of Ukraine, and I'm trying to cover as many different aspects of the financial world as possible. So in today's video, we're going to talk about trade insurance, which is another area that has now come into focus, and all of the major insurance companies have declared that they will no longer be insuring any imports or exports to Russia and Ukraine. So I'll go through some of the details as to what trade insurance is, why it's important to world trade, and what the implications of this are for both the companies involved and the global economy. I'll then want to talk about the Nord Stream 2 pipeline in a bit more detail. So, as you may be aware, Russia has a variety of pipelines that it has laid all over Europe that transports natural gas. And natural gas is a raw material that they have in abundance, and it's used by a lot of countries around Europe to produce electricity. But also in those countries, the natural gas is being fed directly to consumers for use in their houses. So we'll go through exactly what's happening with Nord Stream 2. It's a massive infrastructure project that's taken 10 years to complete and is now coming under fire. So we'll go through that, and then I'll talk about the countries that are currently dependent on Russian gas in Europe and what those countries have announced with regards to their future position on the purchase of Russian gas, because it's not straightforward to replace the supply of gas from Russia with other countries because of the infrastructure and also the forward contracts and a lot of other intricacies that are involved in those processes. So I'll go through that in a bit more detail. I'll then give you an update from an Austrian company called OMV, which is another large energy business which has come out in the last few days and made a statement with regards to what's going to happen with its Russian enterprises. I'll then give you a quick update from the IMF, who've made a statement about what they think is going to be the global impact of this crisis. So before we get into that, as usual, if I could ask you to give me a thumbs up at some point during this video, I'd really appreciate that. And please subscribe if you haven't done so already. And don't forget that this video includes chapters, so if there's a section that's not that interesting to you, it's really easy to skip over it and move on to the next. Trade credit insurance is a fundamental part of the international business world. And this insurance provides cover for both importers and exporters in the event that either they don't get paid or something happens to their goods. So I thought it'd be useful to give a very quick overview as to how this system works, because I know a lot of the viewers of this channel are interested in learning more about the world of finance. And so I think it's worth taking a moment just to have a run through exactly how this operates. If you're an importer of goods, then the counterparty that you're dealing with in an overseas country who's selling those goods to you may ask you to provide anything up to 100% of the purchase price in advance. Now, obviously, from a business point of view, that represents risk to your business. If you hand over money to a company in another country and then you don't receive those goods, how are you going to cover yourself to make sure that you can reclaim that cash? So the world of business has built up a structure of international insurance. So any company that you're dealing with in another country will be assessed by an insurance company. So they'll be able to look at, firstly, the country risk. So if you're dealing with a counterparty in Germany, for example, then the insurers will look at what are the risks of a German company not paying you. And Germany is seen to have good creditworthiness. So the insurance company will probably take a view that Germany is good risk, that you're dealing with a country that is trustworthy and therefore they're happy to cover that risk. They will then look at what the company you're dealing with does. So is it involved in a sector that it understands? So if it was oil or gas, for example, then that's obviously very well covered. And if the company you're buying from is a big multinational company, then it will be rated by an agency. And therefore, the insurance company will look at the risk and say, this is a multinational investment grade company from a country that is highly creditworthy. Therefore, we are very comfortable that this is a very low risk transaction. So if you're importing from that company, then you can obtain trade credit insurance very easily. And what that insurance covers you for is the event that you don't get those goods. So you may make the payment in advance, and if that company does not deliver those goods, then you can claim upon that insurance and get your money back. So that gives you comfort and satisfaction that you know that in the event that either the goods go missing or that company goes bust, you can get your money back. So that's how it works for importers. For exporters, it's slightly different. So if you're exporting a good to Germany, you will need to insure that good to make sure that it arrives safely. And if something happens in transit or it goes missing or it's damaged, then you know you've got coverage and you've got insurance and you can claim back on that insurance and receive back the full funds if it's not your fault. So this whole system of trade credit insurance underpins the international trade between different countries. And we've just heard this week that all of the insurers have now suspended all future trade credit insurance for any business with Russia and Ukraine. The insurers have deemed that it's now too high risk. Obviously, there are risks in terms of the transit of goods, and there's also risks with regards to the failure of companies. So the removal of that credit insurance now means that it is going to be virtually impossible for any company to do any business whatsoever with anybody in Russia or Ukraine. So this is essentially acting like an unofficial sanction. So it's not been imposed directly by the governments around the world, but these are a trade body and this is a commercial relationship. And the decision has been made that the commercial relationship is now too high risk, and the likelihood of the insurers losing money through more and more claims is very high. So they've now suspended all future insurance policies. So that means that we have now got essentially a complete shutdown of all imports and exports to and from Russia, unless you wanted to do that on an uninsured basis. So essentially any company that does trade with Russia right now would be doing it at their own risk. If you don't get paid or your goods go missing, then that's going to be your loss to cover yourself. So this is quite a big impact, I think, on the financial markets. It just further strengthens the sanctions against Russia and means that all of those imports and exports that we've been talking about in previous videos will essentially just stop now completely. Russia provides around 40% of all of the natural gas exported into Europe. It has huge reserves of natural gas, and over the last 20 years, Russia has been installing a pipeline to supply all of Europe directly. So these are major infrastructure projects. We're talking pipelines that are hundreds of miles long, and a lot of them travel under the sea or through areas that have extreme climate conditions. So there's a lot of engineering goes into these projects. And one of the biggest pipelines that Russia has right now is Nord Stream. And the first Nord Stream pipeline was completed in 2011. And this pipeline is almost 800 miles long, and the vast majority of it runs underneath the sea. So this has been a massive engineering project. And it transports natural gas directly from Russia to Germany. Now, Germany uses natural gas in two ways. The first is that it is supplied directly to the households in Germany. Around about 50% of all households in Germany use natural gas for heating and cooking. In addition to the household use, natural gas is also used to produce around about 15% of Germany's electricity through their natural gas power stations, and it's also supplied directly to industry for industrial use. Germany is a net importer of natural gas. It doesn't have enough reserves itself. And around about 38% of all of its gas is supplied directly by Russia. And demand for natural gas in Germany from Russia is rising because the cost of the Russian gas is the lowest in the market. So as soon as the first Nord Stream pipeline was completed, Germany and Russia started on a joint venture to construct a second pipeline, and this pipeline has been called Nord Stream 2. This additional pipeline runs parallel to the first pipeline, so essentially it's being laid on exactly the same path. And in order to construct the pipeline, a Swiss company was created and six different counterparties all invested into the business. Gazprom, which is the Russian business that owns the natural gas in Russia, owns 50% of Nord Stream 2. and five international energy businesses all own 10% each. And they are the UK business Shell, the French business Total Energy, the Austrian business OMV, and two German businesses, Unipor and Wintershall. Work on Nord Stream 2 started as soon as Nord Stream 1 was completed in 2011, and it has taken 10 years to build the pipeline. This is a massive infrastructure project. The vast majority of this pipeline has been laid deep underwater. So there's a lot of engineering, knowledge and work and cost that's gone into this. The total cost of laying this second pipeline is $11 billion. And that's been split equally between the six shareholders. So each of the international businesses involved in this project have invested around about $1.1 billion each. Now, back in 2018, the US raised concerns about this pipeline because they were worried that it would create influence between Russia and Germany. The issue then related to what would happen if Russia threatened to switch off this supply, because that would mean switching off household heating and cooking and also electricity in Germany. So the concern was that Russia would have direct leverage over Germany and all of its decision making, and the US didn't want that situation to occur. The US remained opposed to the pipeline for the whole period that Donald Trump was in power. However, when Joe Biden took office, he announced in May 2021 that he was happy for the pipeline to be opened. This caused a lot of consternation in the US, and as the military presence on the border of Ukraine started to increase, it was later decided to reverse this decision. The pipeline was completed in September 2021. However, it hasn't actually opened for business because it didn't get the sign-off in terms of certification, and the pressure from the US and the continued concerns over Russia's invasion of Ukraine meant that everybody put all of the issues on hold. On the 23rd of February, sanctions were imposed against Nord Stream 2 directly, which means that it can no longer access any capital from the financial markets. Now, this has put the project under immense pressure, and there's now rumours that the business is going into liquidation. All of the staff have been fired, so 140 employees have all been released, and there is a major question mark as to whether or not this pipeline will ever become operational now. All of the international parties involved in this pipeline have advised that they no longer want to invest any further capital into any Russian projects, and Shell have stated that they would like to exit from all of their Russian JVs. We're waiting to hear from statements on the other parties, and I'll touch on Austria's OMV in a minute. So I thought it was worth briefly touching on the situation in Germany and Italy, who are the two biggest buyers of Russian gas in Europe, excluding Turkey. Now, Germany have stated that they now want to reduce their reliance upon Russia, and they are in talks with other LNG providers to source more natural gas. So as I touched on in a previous video, the alternative to taking gas in gas form is to take it in a liquefied form. So the gas can be reduced in temperature or pressure and then put into bottles and transported as liquefied natural gas. Now, the problem with LNG is that it's more expensive because there's more processes involved. You actually have to treat the gas to get it into a liquefied form. And then obviously at the other end, when you're using it in your power plant, you have to then expand it back into a gas form to utilize it. So there's a lot more cost involved. So there is going to be some financial pain involved in any change in supplier. But Germany have now come out and stated that they want to reduce their purchases from Russia and are now making moves towards doing that. They've also said that they may start to reopen some of their coal-powered fire stations. So environmentally, this is really bad news. The reason that a lot of countries have moved to using natural gas for power stations is that it's more efficient, it's cleaner, and environmentally it's friendlier. It's not as friendly as renewable energy, but in terms of the cost balance, it is a more affordable way of producing slightly cleaner electricity. So these plants have been opening up all around the world and replacing coal-powered fire stations. If we now have to see a move back towards coal, that's going to set everybody back from an environmental perspective. We will see more emissions. It's another impact of this crisis that now there are talks about potentially going backwards and reopening coal-powered stations. Italy has a high dependence on natural gas and produces around 40% of all its electricity from this power source. Italy has to import 90% of all of its natural gas, and 40% of all of its imports in 2021 came from Russia. So there's a really high dependency as it sits right now. Now, the Italian authorities have confirmed that they would like to reduce their reliance on Russian gas, and a minister flew to Qatar this week to start negotiations on increasing the amount of LNG that Italy buys from Qatar with immediate effect. The Italians are also asking if it's possible for a price cap to be introduced into the gas markets. Now, this is something that would obviously benefit anybody who is a buyer of natural gas. And what they're trying to do here is to put a limit on the price that Russia can charge all of the countries around the world for its natural gas supplies. Now, the problem with that is that somebody has to pick up the cost, because if the price of natural gas in the international markets is rising and you agree to have a price cap, then if the market price rises above that cap, the supplier of that natural gas would then have to absorb that extra cost. So essentially what the Italians are saying is that they want the gas suppliers around the world to come to an agreement of a maximum price. Now, I would doubt severely that Russia would agree to that, because they're in a position of power and they are entirely dominant in Europe because of these pipelines. So they would essentially be giving up that power, which I would suggest at this moment in time is very unlikely to happen. OMV is a large Austrian energy business that has close ties with Russia, and it has now come out and announced that it will no longer be making any future investments into Russia. As I mentioned earlier in this video, OMV is one of the partners on the Nord Stream 2 project, so it has invested over $1 billion into that project, and it will now be walking away from that venture. But it also has major investments in other Russian gas fields. It has a direct 24.99% stake in the gas field that is supplying the Nord Stream 2 pipeline. So this is a huge gas field. And the capacity of that field that is owned by OMV equates to the equivalent of 100,000 barrels of oil per day. Now, if you think that the current price of oil is over $100 per barrel, 100,000 barrels per day would equate to $10 million per day of value for this business. And they have now announced that they want to walk away from this investment. So you can see the financial impact that all of these decisions are having on businesses all around the world. $10 million per day impact on future profit. This has nothing to do with what they've paid out so far, the actual sunk cost of their investments. Now, OMV have stated that the hit to them of exiting from Russia will be around about $2 billion, but that just equates to the money that they've invested. It doesn't equate to their future reserves, future profitability, and all of those other issues. And this is another example of how hard these energy businesses are being hit by this Russian exit. The IMF have come out this week and made a statement on the situation in Ukraine, advising that it was already driving energy and grain prices higher and had sent a wave of more than 1 million refugees to neighbouring countries while triggering unprecedented sanctions on Russia. While the situation remains highly fluid and the outlook is subject to extraordinary uncertainty, the economic consequences are already very serious. The ongoing war and associated sanctions will have a severe impact on the global economy. It said price rises would be felt worldwide, and authorities should provide fiscal support for poor households for whom food and fuel made up a higher proportion of expenses, adding that the economic damage would increase if the war escalated. Sweeping sanctions imposed on Russia by the United States, European countries and others would have a substantial impact on the global economy and financial markets, with significant spillovers to other countries. So what's the summary and conclusion today? Well, the removal of trade insurance for all importers and exporters now means that we've got a carpet ban on all business with Russia. So the Western world has turned its back entirely on Russia, and that will have an impact on the global economy. And we're seeing all of the nations come out and make statements and start to make some moves towards finding alternative options to Russian supplies. So the biggest impact will be for energy. And clearly, natural gas is the biggest problem right now. So Germany and Italy are two of the biggest purchasers of Russian gas, and they've both come out and said that they're now looking to find alternative suppliers. And the Nord Stream 2 pipeline looks like it's completely dead and buried at the moment. So the question is, how quickly will this impact upon the world economy? Well, it's already impacting right now. So we've seen oil prices move to around about $120 per barrel. And I think it's likely that that's going to continue going up. And liquefied natural gas prices have also gone up dramatically. So we've seen a doubling in the price of Dutch gas and British gas. So we've got really high energy prices, and that's coming on top of an extremely pressurized economy anyway. So we were already creaking at the seams with the high energy and food prices. And what's going on in Ukraine right now is going to take all of those things past the point where we will be able to cope with this. So inflation is at an all-time high in a lot of countries around the world right now, and it's likely to continue going upwards. And there won't really be any way for governments to be able to bring that back down. Increasing interest rates will only increase the burden on companies and individuals who have debt. It won't bring down the price of oil or food, because those prices are going up because of shortages in supply. Because we've turned our back on Russia, there isn't a quick way to fix the supply chain. You can't get all of the oil and natural gas really quickly into Germany and Italy. So we either have the choice of paying very high prices to other exporters or continuing to take that Russian supply. So it's a really difficult equation. But I think the bottom line here is that the world economy is really going to be stretched beyond breaking point. So the IMF have already identified it. They've come out, as have the World Bank, and they've stated that there's going to be severe strain put on the global economy. I think severe strain means recession. A lot of countries around the world have got record levels of debt. Everybody's had to borrow through the pandemic to fund all of their support schemes. And we just can't cope with energy prices continuing to be high for a long period of time. And that's the reality of what we're facing right now. So within 2022, I think there's a really high chance that we will see official recession in a lot of the major economies around the world. Recession is called when you have two consecutive quarters of falling GDP. And it's quite likely that we could have that before the end of this year. Hopefully you've enjoyed what I've said today. Maybe not the actual content, but the actual structure of it and the detail and the information that I'm sharing with you. And that's really the point of this channel. What I'm trying to do is let you have some detailed information on all of the different facets within the economy that are affected by this crisis. So if you like that sort of thing, then please subscribe and don't forget to give me a thumbs up for today's video.